Today is the first day of the Chinese calendar and all other calendars that begin on the Lunar New Year. Yesterday was the last day of the year of the tiger, and today now begins the year of the rabbit. What is the significance of this change? What superstitions exist about the year of the rabbit? And how did this unique system of timekeeping become invented? You're listening to Race and Tyler Talk Wikipedia, episode 101, The Chinese Zodiac.
Okay, Tyler, our getting to know you question today comes from my local library. At our local library that my kids like to go to, they have recently started checking out, you can check out a telescope, which is awesome. I don't think libraries when I was a kid, you were checking out telescopes.
Oh.
You can check out a telescope or a microscope. And
wow.
We were asked that question, and I like the, I think that's a fun question. So Tyler, given the choice, telescope or microscope?
I love this question. I think it's definitely telescope for me. I mean, I think a microscope would be cool, but I love the idea of having access to a telescope. And I have to say with some poignancy that I actually feel quite sad living in the city that I can't really see the stars here. Not that I've actually ever really lived anywhere where you could see the stars. In Richmond, it was suburban enough that there was light pollution. I mean, I could see like Orion's Belt and things, but you couldn't see very, very detailed. And I sometimes think about that as a big difference from what separates us from older time periods in the world. I think before the invention of electric lighting, people just were more familiar with the stars because you could go look at them, you know?
Yeah. Every night,
everyone was looking at them, and it was a source of light. You know, the moon itself makes a big difference, depending on what phase it's in, as to how much light you have at nighttime.
Yeah.
Anyways, all that is to say that I would love to look at the stars, which to do that, I'd have to go out to Palm Springs or something.
Yeah, to Nevada.
Can you see the stars from where you guys are?
Yeah, we're far enough out that we can see the stars pretty well. Arizona is interesting in that if you're not in Phoenix, you are in a rural place, basically. Like Phoenix and Tucson are these two big population centers, and then it's just a lot of empty space.
Wow.
And so we are far enough outside of like the kind of major metro area that we're near that we get pretty good stars. But every time we drive up to my parents' place, which is way the heck out there, there's like no light pollution. And I get out of the car, like we usually drive up in the evening, and I get out, it's like, oh man, like it's pretty spectacular when you
wow.
really get out into the sticks, which I'm sure you've seen when you've been out in like, you know, Utah had an okay light, especially if you were out in like the parks and stuff, the national parks. If you've ever spent the night out there, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and I've spent so little time like actually doing that. You know, I even went to where your parents live. I should have looked at the night sky when we were out.
Yeah,
there.
We didn't really do that.
I didn't really look. Shame on me. So what's your answer?
So I think I'm telescope as well. I actually had a telescope as a kid. And I loved, we'd set it up in the front yard and look at the craters on the moon. And so I'm telescope as well. I wonder, not to like grasp at too many straws, but I kind of, that didn't surprise me that we were both telescope. that feels very like,
is it a personality thing?
I think
minute and introspective, and the other is very vast and like extra worldly. I'm making this up, but
no, that's yeah, like I said, I kind of feel silly talking about it, but I think there's something there. Like,
there's something there, right? Yeah,
yeah. Like, I feel like philosophers, not that that's what we are, but like reach for a telescope,
yes, and a scientist would grab a microscope,
which of course that doesn't really make a lot of sense because there's plenty of scientists doing space stuff, but
space
something
stuff.
About looking at making yourself feel really small by looking at space, that feels English majory to me, but your mileage might vary, but telescope. Although microscopes are real fun too.
Yeah, I haven't played around too much with a microscope outside of school, but seems cool. If I knew what I was looking at, I think that's the other thing. I'm like, I don't have anything to look at under there. Whereas a telescope, you always have something to look at.
Yeah, you just point it at the moon.
All right, so as it happens, today is the first day of the Lunar New Year, and as such, it is the first day of the Chinese New Year. So happy Chinese New Year, everybody.
I actually wore my, I'm wearing a red shirt to our recording today in honor of Chinese New Year.
Oh, I should have done that too. That's a great
wearing day. Red is lucky, so here you go.
And so out of celebration for the event, but also out of my own personal interest lately in astrology, we decided to take up the topic today of the Chinese zodiac and what it means. And I'm really excited to talk about this. This is the kind of episode where I'm doing the research and then all of a sudden I look up and my browser has 40 different tabs open. I can't see them to click through them or anything, but there's so much to dig into here, so I'm really excited about it. But to start off with, I wanted to talk about not only the Chinese zodiac, but the history of calendars themselves and how timekeeping emerged in the human population as it is today. So the word calendar comes from the verb in Latin calare, which means to call out. And this is because people were calling out a particular thing that they noticed happening in nature. And then they would mark a note of when it happened and how often. And Race, can you guess what natural occurrence they were pointing to in ancient Rome?
Wouldn't be the eclipses, because that doesn't happen that's not like a yearly thing. Mm-hmm. I would think the biggest thing that I notice as the year moves, and maybe this is just because I have children to put to bed, is the length of the days.
Oh,
in winter,
like how much sunlight you have, right?
Yeah, like in winter, like right now, it's like by the time I even get home from work, it's like dark.
It's already like dark.
My kids want to go to sleep. Whereas in summertime, it doesn't get dark till almost 8 o'clock. So
yes, that is a great guess, and it's part of the way the calendars work for sure. What they were calling out in ancient Rome was actually a much more precise thing that happened at a definite time in a definite window of time. I'm trying to be vague here. And it was something like incontrovertible. Everybody would look at it and be like, oh yeah, now it's right. It's right now. You know,
was it like yearly or monthly, daily?
That kind of gives it away, I guess.
Okay. Then is it the full moon then?
That you're so close. It's the new moon.
Oh, okay. No.
Yes, because the full moon is a great guess, but you know, I don't know if you can always tell when the full moon is.
Yeah, right? Like the day before, the day after, it looks kind of similar,
but the new moon, you just point to it and you're like, oh, there's nothing there.
There's literally nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was referring to the new moon, although not to be outdone, there were other calendars that did point to the full moon. So maybe they had a better way of telling when it was, but I think there's some kind of waffling there, because it seems like it gets closer and closer and you don't know how big it's going to get.
Right.
So the first recorded calendars in human history come from Egyptian and Sumerian culture during the Bronze Age, which dates all the way back from 3300 BC to about 1200 BC. And these calendars were dependent on writing. And I wonder, if you don't have a writing system, can you even make a calendar? Ancient Egypt did have a writing system. Ancient Sumer did have a writing system. And so they were able to have calendars. The answer to my question is you actually can make a calendar if you don't know how to write. And archaeologists have found tally sticks from back to the Paleolithic age, which tracked the cycles of the moon all the way far as back as ancient humans, who existed in the Paleolithic age. And that's actually a very broad stretch of time that is older than 11,000 years ago and goes all the way back to basically the beginning of hominid existence a couple million years ago. So who knows how old those tally sticks are, but it's clear that ancient humans were always interested in keeping some sense of the way that time is moving. Wikipedia says the course of the sun and the moon are the most salient, regularly recurring natural events useful for timekeeping. And in pre-modern societies around the world, lunation and the year were most commonly used as time units. So we'll talk about the two different forms that it's mentioned. The first is the cycle of the moon. And this refers to keeping time by the cycle of the moon is called a lunar calendar. A lunar calendar marks the passing of time with the phases of the moon, and there is a new moon roughly every 29 and a half days per cycle. Lunar calendars in the purely lunar sense are very rare. They exist in some cultures. The Islamic calendar is a lunar calendar, and the calendar of the Igbo of Nigeria and the Maori of New Zealand are also lunar. But a purely lunar calendar that goes every 29 and a half days will quickly drift away from the natural seasons of the year because the movement of the moon is not related to the movement of the earth around the sun.
Right.
So if you were to actually have a purely lunar calendar, then it would drift through the seasons. And in about 33 lunar years, each month of the calendar would have spent time existing in every season of the year. So your January would start in winter, but then it eventually would get into spring and summer and autumn. And all of that is still being considered January because there's nothing anchoring it to the time of the solar year. The opposite of this is a solar calendar. And that calculates time based on how long it takes for the Earth to travel around the sun once in a complete revolution. And ancient cultures did not know that the Earth was traveling around the sun. They had no way of at all of knowing how long it took for that journey to happen. So how do you think ancient cultures measured the length of the solar year?
So for that one, I am reminded of planting crops. So my family's always had a garden. Like growing up, we had a pretty substantial like corn patch thing that my grandpa kind of spearheaded. And there was a time to plant, and you couldn't plant too early.
Mm.
And he had a system specific to our little town. There's a prominent mountain that you can see from town. And he said, if there's still, the mountain's called Escudilla. And he says, if there's still snow on Escudilla, it's too early to plant.
Oh, okay. That's all got to be localized system.
Yeah, super localized, right? But like he had developed that little system for himself. And so like,
wow.
Hey, the weather's been nice the last few weeks. Do you think it's time to plant? And he'd say, and my mom still says it, not until all the snow's gone off. And so I could see people building their own kind of thing like that, right? Like, well, we've got to, out of practical necessity in some cases, like we need to know when to plant. And so you watch the seasons kind of move like that. And then you, because, you know, your planting season is only season come at different times. So that's seems to me how you'd kind of break up the year, or at least one way, if you're like an agrarian society anyways.
Oh, definitely. I think that's a great idea. And that's very similar to what the ancient Egyptians did. The way that they measured the solar year was by calculating the position of the sun in the sky.
Yep.
So in the summertime, the sun rises higher in the sky. If you were to actually take a sextant, whatever the instrument is that measures. Is it a sextant? Wow.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Pulled that out of nowhere. and looked at the angle, then the summer solstice is the day in the year when the sun is at its highest position. And the winter solstice is the day when the sun is at its lowest position. Egypt was the first culture that we know of that developed a solar calendar. And they did this actually not by measuring the position of the sun, but by marking the rising of the dog star, which is known as Sirius.
Okay.
And Sirius rises every year on July 19th, which, as it happens in Egypt, coincides with an annual flooding of the Nile River.
Oh.
And so for ancient Egypt, it was important, like you said, from an agrarian standpoint, because it was going to mean that a flood was coming. And I could tell looking at this article that there is so much to dig into here about the star named Sirius and the Nile River. Why it floods every year at this time is something that I did not look into.
Yeah, that was my question, was like,
very much like to learn more about that.
Cool.
right. Yeah. And there's a lot of also really interesting religion and superstition that happens regarding the star Sirius, which was very important in ancient cultures.
Yeah, I wonder if that's where the term dog days of summer comes from.
Oh, I think it must. Yes. There are a lot of phrases that come out of it, I noticed at a glance, and that might be one of them, because otherwise, yeah. I mean, it seems like it would, right? July.
Yeah, I guess.
Super interesting. The solar year, the amount of time that it takes the Earth to go around the sun, is 365.25 days. And so that's 365 and a quarter. And because of the fraction, this calendar will actually drift if you don't account for it, in the same way of the lunar calendar, where if you do not account for the fraction of the day, then you spend enough years and eventually your January is in summer and your calendar doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
So we now account for this by adding a leap day to the calendar every 4 years. But the Egyptian calendar, unfortunately, did not do this. And as such, they ran into problems. I guess you have to do a reset now and then when it stops working.
Interesting.
Most calendars now, though, are not lunar or solar, but they are lunisolar, which means that they account for both the moon and the sun. And I think this is to say that a purely solar calendar would have no other division apart from a year of 365 days. But the problem with that is that's a very long amount of time. And, you know, in practice, that's hard to keep track of. And there's good reasons to have smaller divisions. We now have the month and the week as ways of following our timekeeping. And so the calendar that we use now is lunisolar, meaning that it follows the path of the sun and that it is 365.25 days long, but also that it kind of follows the pattern of the moon, where we have months that are broken up into 30 or 31 day time periods. And the word month actually comes from the word moon. It's only loosely related to the lunar cycle because we don't keep the months based on the new moon and the full moon.
Right.
But they are divided so that, you know, it's kind of close, like 29 days, 30. It's
similar. Yeah, it's about 29. But yeah, that of course couldn't be the case because February is much shorter than July. That's
yes.
Not based on the moon isn't changing its cycle between February and July, but we've just given names to those months. That makes sense.
Right. So we have months to account for the moon. We have years to account for the sun. We have days to account for the Earth. But where do weeks come from? A week is unique in that it has no astronomical basis. But weeks have been around for a long time. And the earliest evidence of an astrological significance of a seven-day period is connected to ancient Sumerian culture and a priest king named Gudea, who built a seven-room temple, which he dedicated with a seven-day festival. And in the flood story that comes out of the Epic of Gilgamesh, the storm lasts for 7 days, and then the dove is sent out after 7 days, and the Noah-like character in the story leaves the ark 7 days after it reaches the firm ground.
Wait, hold on. So how this week, this first week that we know about, how long ago is this?
This is 2100 BC, so 4,000 years ago. Yeah.
We had a week,
right.
Cool.
Super interesting. And then we also know, of course, that the week is a part of the creation story in Judaism and Christianity. In the book of Genesis, God took 7 days to build the world. So that's super interesting in practice because we still use the week today, but they do have very ancient origins. And those origins are not anything that you would find in nature. There's nothing that you can point to that happens every 7 days that says, oh, look at that. It did it again. You
know? Sure.
Super interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess part of it has to come from like 365 divides pretty well by seven.
Yeah.
Right. So like if you think about a year, which it is like you said, 52
weeks and change.
Yeah. 365 divided by seven is 52.14.
Oh, okay.
So that's pretty close. Interesting. Yeah. It's interesting that it took hold that long ago.
Right, right. I also think it's interesting that we use the week. The week is one of the most important units, like in our day to day. And I personally just wonder if it's kind of part of the natural, like, human work cycle. You know, you work for 5 or 6 days and then you get tired and you have to rest. You know, you need a weekend. It's important to have that defined.
Yeah, like a natural rhythm.
Right.
Most people, if you just took them and stuck them, you know, raised them in a lab and said, I want you to work as much as you can and tell me when you need a break, you know, in terms of days, it probably would be, you can work 5 or 6 days. But if you try working 10 days with no day off, that's too much. A lot.
Right.
Three is probably too little. Huh. Interesting.
I know. Maybe we're totally making this up, but I wonder if that's been studied. I'm sure it has by anthropologists. And, you know, it's interesting that it's so old and that it continues to happen, because if we were to use a calendar that only had months, it would just, that's too much time, you know?
Yeah, it is a little bit like the whole like problem of coins and change. Like you need certain denominations, like you have to have a penny on a certain level, or you have to have like smaller bits to make up a bigger bit. And yeah, like there has to be a unit smaller than a month, because a month is just too long.
It's too long.
Like, well, my family learned this. We've tried like budgeting and a bunch of stuff on a monthly basis.
Oh, okay.
And shout out to anybody, if you're trying to start a budget or start anything like that, monthly is all wrong. You can't grasp a month in my experience. Wow. You can't
grasp a month that we can.
Yeah, like okay, this is what I'm gonna spend this month. Yeah. This is, and it's like you can plan for a week, and that, at least for me and my like the way I get plan like my groceries and stuff, mostly is because I can get in about seven, and I can get in one trip about what we'll eat in 7 days.
Oh, okay.
Like I can pick all of the ingredients I need for our meals for 7 days, but I couldn't do it for a month, obviously.
Yeah.
And so, that's so interesting. If you had asked me when the week came about and asked me to guess, I would have said like Charlemagne or something. Like,
yeah, like kind of more modern society.
For maybe, sure, or, not 2000 BC. That's crazy. Wow. Okay. So I really am kind of floored by this concept of the week, and that, but it makes sense that people have been kind of trying to make sense of the seasons and the time as it changes around them. And all of that leads us nicely into the discussion of the idea of astrology, which is, I guess you could say it's kind of the idea of like putting meaning or interpreting or finding meaning in the passage of time or in the changes in the seasons or whatever. So to discuss Western astrology is the system of interpreting the heavens and the meaning of Earth's position in the heavens that's developed in Western culture. It has very old roots. It comes largely through Ptolemy in the 2nd century, but even that is based on much older Greek and Babylonian systems. But as we know it now, astrology in the West, if I say just astrology to you, it's centered around an individual and kind of meaning that comes from the date of that person's birth. And Tyler, you've talked to us a lot about calendars, and this is not a calendar system. It's more of a divination or fortune telling system. And so Western astrology falls into the category of what's called horoscopic astrology. And a horoscope, these are all words that I'd heard before, obviously horoscope, zodiac, astrology, but it's been very interesting to get kind of a firm definition on this. So a horoscope is a visual representation of the heavens for a specific moment in time in order to interpret whatever meaning might be inherent in the alignment of the planets at that moment. So it's basically like freezing and making a map of the solar system, whatever, at a certain moment in time. And the idea is that where these planets are placed, how they're aligned and their kind of grouping and so on, it reflects the nature of that moment. And so anything born during that moment is affected by, you know, the organization of the spheres and of the cosmos at that moment. And this can then be analyzed, and you can look at your chart, see where everything was when the day, for instance, that you were born, and you can get some meaning from that according to horoscopic astrology. Astronomy factors into this through the concept of the zodiac. This is probably my favorite thing that I've learned researching for this episode. Specifically, where the word zodiac comes from and what it is. So like I said, we keep a map of the heavens, or we make maps of the heavens in order to know the alignment of the planets or celestial bodies at any moment in time. In Western cultures, we have identified and named constellations, which are visible patterns of stars in the sky that we just kind of have picked out or have noticed are somewhat prominent. And the Earth moves through the stars as it circles the Earth throughout the year. And it moves through a fixed, you know, space is, well, this is getting a little deep for us, but space is essentially fixed, right? Like the stars that we can see from Earth are essentially fixed where they're at. And so as we move around the sun, we continue to see the same stars in the same configurations. The band of stars that we move through and that are visible to us throughout the year, that band is what is known as the zodiac.
Oh, which,
okay. Yeah.
Huh.
I did not know that. And so, you know, all of this is what gives us the fact that different stars are visible depending on your position on the Earth and the time of year. So if you're you know, Argentina, think the sky is going to look different in January to you than it does, you know, to somebody in Toronto. And also in January, those are going to look different than they will in July. And so I know this is brought to my mind very clearly every winter, because I took an astronomy class in the winter of 2011, and I know it was the winter, not because I remember every class I've taken, but because when I walk out during an Arizona night, I look at the stars and I'm like, pretty. But when I walk out in the winter, I'm like, I know that a very nice man named David Morris taught me all of these. I recognize them, like, and only in the wintertime. And so shout out to David Morris at the Eastern Arizona College. Probably one of the best classes I ever took, actually. I thought that class was unbelievable. We had to memorize, and it's a shame that I've forgotten them, but we had to memorize the names of stars, particularly prominent or, you know, interesting stars. I remember some of the names, but I couldn't point them out to you anymore, which is a real shame. But, you know, things like the Big Dipper are pretty easy to spot if you've kind of ever had them pointed out to you. I think earlier you mentioned Orion's Belt, and that one is extremely prominent as well. I think the stars in the belt are also particularly bright. So like you said, even in a place with less than ideal lighting, you can still probably make out Orion's Belt.
Yeah. And is the question there, is the winter sky of stars completely different from the summer sky, or is it like mostly different?
It's mostly different because it depends, right? Like where you're at.
Yeah.
And it'll depend. So some constellations are visible year round because of their, because if you think about
Big Dipper, right?
I think in North America, the Big Dipper is visible all the time.
Okay. Huh.
It'll be at different points in the sky. So like, I think in the winter, it's kind of straight overhead. It passes, you know, you have to look up. Whereas in the sun, and I might be totally wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure in the summer, you kind of have to be looking off, and it's a much lower trajectory in the sky.
This is so hard to wrap my mind around.
Yeah. That's why I really enjoyed this astronomy class. It was really cool. But it's kind of like what you were saying about the sun. So like right now, and I'm acutely aware of what you were saying about the sun's position in the sky, because right now, tonight, it actually is going to freeze tonight in the desert that I live in.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because the sun is so low, right? Like it's just my life changes a lot. And in 4 months when it's summertime or almost summertime here, it's going to be so hot that I'm not going to want to go outside in just a few months. And that's, you know, the sun is just directly overhead and it comes into my windows differently and stuff. And so I think the same is true in a sense of the constellations, like the Big Dipper, depending on the time of year, might be directly overhead. It might be off to the side, kind of in the same way that the summer does or the sun does throughout the year. But the Big Dipper is a great example because that's a constellation that we kind of see. We kind of, people generally know it's an easy-ish shape to point out. And it's got, you know, the story is like, it looks like a little water dipper, or like a ladle kind of thing.
Mm.
And the zodiac is a very related concept. So we have decided that certain stars in the sky are different things. So there's that one's a crab, that one's a bull or whatever. And so the word zodiac comes from zodiacus, which is a Latinization of an ancient Greek word. And the Z-O at the beginning should tip you off that we're talking about animals. It comes from the same root as zoo. And so zodiacus is a cycle or circle of little animals.
Wow.
Yeah.
No idea.
I didn't either. So animals, and that's a nod to the fact that in the Western zodiac tradition that we have, the symbols are almost exclusively animals through the year. So, you know, when you look up to into the sky at a certain time, it's like, oh, right now the Taurus constellation is exceedingly prominent, whereas in a few months, the Sagittarius constellation will be prominent. And so in that way, Western astrology breaks up the year into 12 cycles, and they all have different names and symbols. And so on that note, Tyler, what is your Western zodiac star? What star were you born, or what constellation, I guess we could say, were you born on?
My birthday is in August, and my zodiac sign is Leo, the lion.
Leo, the lion. I would just temper the expectations of anybody who's like, I'm going to go out and look at the stars that shape out a lion. Anytime I have somebody point them out to me, I'm like, that is maybe a hexagon, if you're lucky. This is not a lion.
Leo in particular really does not look like a lion to me. It just looks like you said, a hexagon with like a little hook head.
Yeah, it's like, that is a rhombus, sir. Well, I am an Aries. And so every person listening, if you don't already know it, you, based on which constellations are, you know, kind of most prominent, you belong, or you are, you know, that was the star that you were born under. That was the sky, the horoscope, the map of the sky that was kind of affecting the universe the day that you were born. So according to astrology, that also affected things that were born, which includes includes all of us. And so that's kind of an overview of Western astrology. I was telling you, Tyler, that right before this started, my wife and I looked at, you know, I looked at my Aries sign and we looked at her sign as well. And at least according to the cursory Google search I did, apparently I am a very bad Aries because I am not detail oriented. I am not like determined. I'm not a natural leader. So I'm a very bad Aries, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know that I follow the Leo pattern as well, actually. Although every time I've ever looked up what is a Leo supposed to be, I get a different answer.
Well, that's comforting. Maybe I'll find an Aries description that fits me a little bit better.
Have you ever looked at your, I don't know if there's a name for it, but you in the Western Zodiac, you can go deeper than just one sign. You Ooh. Can get your sun sign, your moon sign, and your rising sign, and then a whole slew of other signs. But in order to do it, you have to know the time that you were born.
Like the time of day?
Right. So if you have the exact time that you were born, there are calculators that will tell you all. I think there's like 9 different signs. I can't remember them all. But I am a Leo sun with a Capricorn moon and a Sagittarius rising.
Okay, so this is like
this is going
subcategories.
Yes, uh-huh. And they each have, in astrology, they each have their own different meanings. Again, I don't really follow any of it, but it is cool to kind of flip through, you know.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. This is something I've also been thinking about. I think I've said on the podcast before that, like, I kind of sometimes daydream about trying to justify human behavior to like a species that's not from Earth. And one of the funniest things that I think that they'd be like, wait, what's happening here? Be like, oh yeah, we get real excited when we meet somebody who was born on the same day as us.
Yeah.
Like if you're meeting a coworker and they're like, hey, my birthday is February 11th. You'd be like, my birthday is February 11th. And the alien would be like, so why is this important? And it'd be like, oh, it really, really isn't, I don't think. But we, for some reason, think that that's great. And one of the things that I've thought about, which is kind of related to this, is wouldn't it be interesting if instead of getting real jazzed about like, oh, yeah, I'm an April 6th person. Like, that's me. That's my special day. And once a year, I get a special day and I get cake and people buy me things. What if instead of one big thing every 365 days, what if just like every day it's like, well, it's 5:30 in the afternoon, this is my minute.
Oh yeah.
And I have 365 little celebrations. You're just like, woo! Just like have an extra bite of cake, and then throughout the year you kind of make up a whole birthday cake.
That is a provocative idea. I do think I would hate that. But it's so capricious. It could have been that way, you know?
Well, right? I think the reason that may not have caught on is it would be a bit real bummer for the people born at like 3:30 in the morning.
Oh, true. Yeah, not every minute is created equal. All right, so now that we've talked about the history of timekeeping and the nature of the Western Zodiac, we now have, I think, a good context to discuss the Chinese Zodiac itself. So what is the Chinese Zodiac? The Chinese Zodiac is a 12-year cycle in which every year is assigned an animal and its reputed attributes. This cycle is popular not only in China, but also other East and Southeast Asian countries, like Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, Singapore, Nepal, Bhutan, Cambodia, and Thailand. And zodiac is, we've discussed, an English word that comes from the Greek. So I would assume that the Chinese culture does not call this the, quote, Chinese zodiac.
Right.
But I don't speak Mandarin, so I'm sure there's a different word for it. But the use of the word zodiac in English is somewhat intentional because it reflects similar superficialities between the Western Zodiac and the Chinese Zodiac. Both systems divide the year into 12 pieces. Both systems use animals to identify the parts. Mm-hmm. And both systems are associated with cultures of ascribing personality or events in a person's life to the supposed influence of that person's relationship to the cycle. So there are 12 animals in the cycle of the Chinese zodiac, and the animals are the rat, ox, tiger, rabbit, dragon, snake, horse, goat, monkey, rooster, dog, and pig, exactly in that order. Each of the animals is assigned a yin and yang element, and they are also assigned one of the five nature elements. So the rat is not only the rat, but it is also yang and water. And the rabbit is yin and wood. And then each of the animals has their own combination. The year is the most famous piece of the Chinese zodiac, but there are other assignations for the month called the inner animals, the day called the true animals, and even the hour called the secret animals.
Ooh.
And the years themselves also cycle through all five of the nature elements, which are fire, earth, metal, water, and wood. This year, we are going into the year of the water rabbit. But the last time that the rabbit came around, which was 12 years ago in 2011, when Race, you were taking your astronomy class, that was the year of the metal rabbit. So even though it was the rabbit both times, there's a different element associated between the two. So all of the animal combinations with the element combinations is 12 times 5. That's a cycle of 60 years where you would go through every single combination of animal and element. Is this based on astrology? As far as I've been able to tell, there is no basis in astronomy here. The list of animals is not something like the Western Zodiac where it's coming from the constellations. But that being said, the list of animals does appear to be deliberate. And there is also a myth around the order that the animals are listed in. And the myth is that the Jade Emperor, which is a primary god in Chinese religion, decreed that the years on the calendar would be named for each animal in the order that they reached him in a race. So the 12 animals in the list all showed up to run the race. And the plan was that whoever won the race would be included first in the zodiac. And so they start running this race, and the course is pretty standard, but it has a very large river, and it's hard for the animals to get through the river. And of all 12 animals, only two were able to cross the river quickly. The first is the ox, which I don't know much about oxen, but I guess they're good at walking in water. So he walked in the river just fine. And he would have been the first to cross the finish line, except that the rat hopped onto the ox's head in order to cross the river in an easy way.
Mm-hmm.
So once they get across the river, the rat hops off the ox and crosses first place in the race. And then the ox was right behind him. He came in second. Then the tiger and the rabbit, very fast animals. They ran the race really quickly, but they were thrown off by the river. So they took third place and fourth place. And in order to get across, the rabbit actually hopped across rocks that were in the river. Fifth was the dragon. And the Jade Emperor was surprised about the dragon because he said, "You're fast and you can fly. This should have been a no-brainer. You should have won." But dragons are also very kind creatures. And the dragon during the race noticed that a village was on fire. So he stopped during the race to bring the village rain and put out the fire. Next came the horse and the snake. The horse ran through the river and the snake hitched a ride by wrapping itself around the horse's leg. And then next was a combination of three animals. The goat, the monkey, and the rooster all worked together to pilot a raft across the river. The rooster was the one who found the raft, and then the monkey and the goat pulled it to the water because presumably they're better at pulling things than the rooster would be. And that's how they got across. Second to last place was the dog. He got too excited by the water and he wanted to splash around and play in it. And he forgot about running the race.
Yeah.
And in last place was the pig. He got too hungry and he stopped to take a snack and finished in dead last. And then there was one other animal, the cat. You'll notice that the cat is not a part of the Chinese zodiac. And this is because in the race, the cat drowned in the river and did not finish.
Ooh.
So he didn't make it into the zodiac. And consequently, this is why not only do cats hate water, but also cats hunt rats. And that's because of the jealousy of finishing the race.
I like that.
It's a neat little story. The animals themselves have meanings that are related to their personality and the attributes that we kind of ascribe to these animals. And you can click through each of the 12. It would take a long time to go through them all. They each have their own meaning, and you can look and see what the meaning is of the year you were born under. But they're also grouped in clusters that are called trines. And so there's, for example, the first trine, which is the rat, the dragon, and the monkey. All three animals together are seen as intense, powerful individuals. They can be intelligent and charismatic, but also maybe a little bit selfish and aggressive. So that's one way that the animals are grouped together by personality. Just like with Western astrology, there's a culture of personality description and destiny description based on the sign that you're born under. And also like Western astrology, there are multiple signs that you can have. So like we talked about with the Western zodiac, you can have your sun sign, your moon sign, and your rising sign. In the Chinese zodiac, you also can be born under the sign of your year, your month, and your hour, all having different meanings. So super interesting system. Race, what is your Chinese zodiac sign? Do you know?
I'm a horse.
We are exactly the same. I'm also a horse because we were both born in the same year, 1990.
Yeah, see, that's an interesting aspect of this where like we could have, you know, I knew that we were probably both going to be horses. But we're not necessarily both going to, so we have the same Chinese zodiac, but not necessarily going to have the same Western zodiac.
Yes.
That's kind of fun.
I think it's an interesting difference because the month that you're born comes up a lot more often, I think, than the year. Like, it's more familiar to be like, oh, yeah, these are my friends with summer birthdays. We're all Leos or something. Whereas you don't really know what year people were born under. It doesn't come up as often.
No, I totally agree. And like, I think a lot more about, you know, you look forward to your birthday month. And so that month is like maybe more prominent in your mind and the way that it intersects with like, I don't know, holidays or travel or whatever. So yeah, you're totally right. That does feel more, more useful in some ways to group, like you said, your friends.
Yeah, and there's also like a natural aspect, right? The months are dictated largely by the seasons that we go through in the year. But there's no kind of season in the 12-year cycle, right? I don't notice anything now that was similar in 2011.
Yeah.
But still cool to think about. And I think it's interesting that even though the Chinese zodiac is famous for its yearly elements, it also has the other pieces as well, because those are obviously useful too.
Well, I've got to say that the horse description is much more accurate for me than the Aries description.
What does it say?
Well, easygoing. Okay. They often overestimate themselves.
Love it.
Motivation and help from others aren't important. As long as they're doing what they like, they will succeed. They can be chatterboxes and have a clear division between like and dislike. However, they are usually indecisive. I mean, you nailed me. That's perfect.
Wow, that's really solid.
Rather than having a clear plan, they leave things to fate. My wife, if and when she listens to this, is nodding like, So, like you said, Tyler, the reason we are discussing this today, at least at the time of recording, by the time when this episode goes out, we'll be just fresh into the new year by Chinese reckoning. So 2023, what's it going to be? Like you already said, it is a rabbit that is associated with water. So that's where you'll get like water rabbit. Last year was actually a water tiger. As far as what that's going to mean for us, according to the Chinese system, I actually found a really interesting interview with a Chinese zodiac advisor where it was from CNN, and they were talking to this woman about what does this all mean. And so one of the things that I learned is that water and rabbit is a rare combination. And it's seen as fairly fortuitous because the rabbit represents wood, and water nurtures wood. So there's kind of some synergy there.
Oh, that's neat. Okay.
According to this interview, industries with wood as their main element, so things like culture, publishing, agriculture, and furniture, might benefit this year. I thought that was super interesting, that the kind of the belief or the effect that the year has extends to things such as that.
Yeah.
It went on to say that fire industries, on the other hand, are going to suffer because fire and water are opposites. So things like digital technology, maybe associated with electricity or water, or whatever, are going to suffer because it's a water year. According to this Chinese geomancer, the year of Water Rabbit will be a gentler year, and we will have time to take a breather, which I think I speak for like culture in general to say, bring it on. I love it. Toilet paper will be an ample supply.
Yes.
You know, we're leaving some dark tiger days behind us, and I'm all on board about that. And so what about me for this year? So the other thing that I interesting thing that I learned is that a lot is in terms of luck. So your personal luck is something that is foretold by the Chinese zodiac, and a lot of it depends on the position of the Tai Sui, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing incorrectly, which are the stellar deities thought to rotate parallel to and in the opposite direction of the planet of Jupiter.
Oh,
so somebody way above our pay grade might need to get into that with us. Yeah. But basically what it comes down to is your sign can either clash or coordinate with the Tai Sui, aka the Grand Duke of Jupiter. So in a particular year, you might find yourself, if you're in opposition, you might have disruptions. And if you are in conjunction with it, then things might go well for you. So Tyler, we decided that we're both horses. So let me look here, and I will read to you the fortune that we might look forward to. So this year, horses will have the peach blossom star shining over them.
Okay.
And that is always good. So I think we are going to be in conjunction with with Jupiter. Professionally, horses will find new opportunities and meet a lot of guardians who will assist them.
Ooh.
Horses will enjoy good relationships. And the warning that a horse would get is pay attention to your family and your personal physical and mental health. And lastly, I love the specificity of these recommendations. Color for clothes, such as pink, orange, and some yellow, are preferred for horses this year.
Oh.
And in terms of traveling, we should head to our south.
To the south. Okay. Yeah.
So the recommendations get even, you know, that granular. I read my wife. So my wife is a rooster, and she needs to brace herself because she will be clashing with Tai Sui this year.
Oh, no.
And so the coming months could be unstable and present challenges. However, to alleviate the blow, a rooster can wear more yellow and brown.
Okay.
And visit places in the west or north. So it looks like my wife and I will be taking separate vacations. I'm going to go to South America and she can go to Alaska, Northwest.
And I own almost no pink or yellow clothing, I have to say. So I think I have to go do some shopping.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I have. Do I have any pink? I have a pink tie. I don't think I think I'm with you. So that's going to dictate our maybe some of our sartorial choices. And I actually read an interesting article as well, a business article talking about international brands, particularly luxury brands like clothing brands and stuff, kind of leaning into this and understanding that, you know, so this is the year of the rabbit. And so lots of like, you know, your Gucci's and your Prada's and stuff that are going to be launching a line this year, they take these things into consideration. And so maybe the motif or something might include maybe an image of a rabbit or just subtle nods to the rabbit or to the fact that this is a water year in an effort to, you know, be appealing to people who are going to be influenced by, you know, what's going to be lucky for me this year. So we might need to run out and buy some pink clothing. And maybe that's exactly what Gucci wants. And they know they're leading us into it. It's vertical integration.
It's vertical integration. They're ready for us. Well, I'm very excited that it sounds like we have a good outlook. I think we have to check in next January and see how it went.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Let's see how the year of the water rabbit goes for us.
Two footnotes before we close out today. The first is that we mentioned that the length of a lunar cycle is about 29 and a half days. Getting in the weeds of that number, the length is actually, quote, approximately 29.53 days. And the reason that it's approximate is that the length of the orbit actually varies from 29.26 to 29.80 days. This is because the sun's gravity has a perturbation effect on the moon, and it changes the length of the moon's orbit based on where the moon is located relative to the sun. The other footnote is about the term dog days, which Race guessed correctly refers to the rising of the dog star Sirius. Hellenistic astrology connected this star with heat, drought, sudden storms, lethargy, fever, mad dogs, and bad luck. It is also the hottest part of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you'd like to follow the show, you can check us out at Race and Tyler Talk Wikipedia on Instagram or Race and Tyler Pod on Twitter. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.